Hi there, Gemma here. If you're enjoying our podcast, then please do come along and put your name down on the wait list for our Schema Circle. And that way you'll hear when we next open the doors for new members to join. The Schema Circle is really our passion project, and it's our online schema coaching membership program. There's nothing really quite like it. It's new and innovative, and we just love it. Now, there's a huge library of content waiting for you already inside. We also continue to do 3 live Q&A coaching calls every month. Now, everything is recorded, of course, and ready for you to view at your own pace. If you're looking for, a unique way to understand yourself better and to make real change, then I do invite you to come and have a look. Go to theredflagproject.com.au/SC. Now, the Schema Circle isn't therapy, but it's a great accompaniment to your own therapy journey. It's also a great resource for therapists and coaches and for anybody, men and women, wanting to know more about schemas and how we can use this fantastic model to empower ourselves to make actual changes, the changes we want in our life. Now, it's currently housed on our Red Flag website, and just click the link below to read all about it. I hope to see you inside one day. Thanks for joining us at the Good Mood Clinic podcast, where we get to the heart of the matter about what makes us humans tick. We're Justine Corry and Gemma Gladstone, 2 clinical psychologists and schema therapists, and we're passionate about helping you break unwanted life patterns and finding new ways to understand yourself and those tricky people around you. Life is way too short to be derailed by our schemas, by self-sabotage, toxic relationships, or a lack of self-worth. So let's tackle this together and help you reclaim your life and who you really are. Hello, and thanks for joining us today. Just want to take a minute to say thank you so much for everybody who's been listening and for all your lovely feedback. And we really appreciate that you're taking the time to listen to our podcast, because of all the podcasts you could possibly be listening to right now, you're deciding to spend some time with us. So we very much appreciate that. Now, today I'm doing a solo episode. In case you don't know me, my name is Gemma Gladstone. I'm a psychologist and a schema therapist, also a supervisor and trainer in schema therapy. And I am based in Sydney, Australia. And together with Justine Corry, we do this podcast, and we have a clinic called the Good Mood Clinic, and we offer schema therapy and schema-based coaching, which is more sort of targeted and short-term based to those people wanting to make some real pattern-breaking changes in their life. And this podcast we've set up during the initial lockdown in 2020, it's all about really trying to help you break those unhelpful life patterns that are getting in your own way of making some really great and important changes in your life, whether that's in the area of relationships or just wanting to improve your general well-being and your mental health. Before we start today's episode, I want to remind you of a couple of things we've created for you. One is, of course, our online course for women, the Red Flag Project. And this is a course we've developed, which is so practical and very targeted for women who are in the dating world currently, who want to find out how they can hone their red flag screening tools. And we talk about external red flags in this course, and we also talk about internal red flags. And that's the process of trusting your gut and trusting your own sense of what you think might be a boundary violation, for example. So it's particularly good for women who are dating who might have an abandonment schema. And they also have a pattern of having had attracted and stayed with emotionally unavailable men or narcissistic guys. So it's a very digestible meaty course, though. Lots of handouts, lots of worksheets. Great if you've got an abandonment schema and you're dating and you want to figure out, why do I keep attracting the same old type of person? Okay, if that's you, then we've created that course specifically for you. The other thing I want to let you know about is we also have a schema chemistry webinar. Now, schema chemistry is a term which basically refers to the intense feeling of attraction we have for someone who's going to trigger our schemas, whether it's our abandonment schema, whether it's our self-sacrifice schema, or our defectiveness schema. The person that we're dating or in a relationship with is going to trigger those schemas. So we've got an intense feeling towards them and a desire to want to be with them because there's something really familiar about this person. And so it does tap into our old stuff. It taps into our model of love that we learned from our own childhood experiences and our own caretakers. So there's nothing like a coincidence when it comes to love and dating, unfortunately. And we're left to our own devices. We will radiate to what is psychologically and implicitly familiar to us. But sometimes this is not in our best interests. So if you want to learn all about that, then go to the link in our show notes for our schema chemistry webinar. And it's a webinar we will tell you all about what schema chemistry is and how to start to examine it and get out of these unhealthy patterns that you may have found yourself in dating and relationships. Okay, so moving on to what I'm going to talk about today. I have so many clients, and I have these schemas as well, and so many other therapists do. These are what we often call in schema therapy other directed schemas, and they tend to hang together. We've spoken about them before, which is the self-sacrifice schema and the subjugation schema, and they're schemas that do clinically overlap a great deal. But there are key differences in these schemas. And we might think about them as very similar in the sense that they're really both subjugating schemas. And when we subjugate, we suppress our authenticity. We suppress an aspect of who we really are. Perhaps we're suppressing our own needs because we want to take care of others, or we're suppressing our own views and desires out of fear of being hurt or out of fear of someone getting angry with us. Or perhaps we're general people pleasers. So we're always looking out for the other person, and we're either pleasing people because we feel guilty, or maybe we feel fearful, we feel afraid of what they might do. And this is, again, on a spectrum and on a continuum. Like all schemas, we can have a little bit of this or we can have a lot of this. But the good news is that these schemas are very treatable and workable. They're very malleable. We can get in, we can look at what's going on with these schemas, and we can change them. And insight is where it's all at initially. We want to put labels onto these life traps, these schemas, and help you understand what's going on through the schema lens. If you have these sort of schemas, and I'm going to get into talking about what they are, what are the points of differences and similarities to help you try to identify where you fit and where your life patterns fit in relation to these schemas. A common feeling, though, is that people can feel trapped, people can feel oppressed. If we're subjugating ourselves, for example, in a relationship, we might feel a sense of being engulfed or being trapped, like we're being controlled, or we might be constantly meeting the needs of others. We might feel that this is a big burden and a big responsibility. It can be really, really exhausting. These schemas are exhausting. They can take a toll on us physically and mentally and emotionally. If we're big people pleasers, we don't have the freedom to be ourselves. And the choices that we make, the decisions that we make, the actions that we take, the behaviors that we take, these can all be dictated and shaped by how we think they're going to affect the other person, family members, work colleagues. So our focus tends to be more on the other person. And that's why they're often called other directed schemas in schema therapy. And I'm going to talk about this in a lot more detail, but just to sort of start thinking about this, just the very word subjugation and what it means. We know that the feeling of subjugation or the life trap of subjugation can rob us of a clear sense of what we want and need and a clear sense of who we are. And often we can experience life from a position of passivity where life happens to us rather than us being an agent in our life, directing our own life. Particularly if you're surrendering to these types of schemers, these types of subjugated schemers, you may be a person who's very, very agreeable. You may be keen to please others. You may be keen to get along with others at all cost, always willing to accommodate others, even to your own detriment. You may be a chameleon in groups, just doing whatever it takes to fit in easily with others, to go along with other people in order to avoid disagreeing with them for fear of them perhaps criticizing you or rejecting you. You may have a great deal of difficulty setting healthy limits in your life and for the people around you. So I like to think about subjugation as an umbrella term, and I'm going to talk about different types of subjugation. And I'm going to, first of all, get into a little bit of detail on this very common schema in schema therapy, which is the self-sacrifice schema. And if you have this schema, you know, there's no getting out of the fact that you're also subjugated as well. They go hand in hand, okay? There's no self-sacrifice without subjugation. It's a version of subjugation. So the self-sacrifice schema describes someone who feels responsible for others and for other people's well-being. Describes a person who really tries to please others because often they're driven by feelings of guilt and the need to take away someone else's suffering. So you self-sacrifice in order to avoid strong feelings of guilt quite often. It feels very uncomfortable when you're not able to take away someone's pain for whatever reason. So, you know, when we're self-sacrifices, we do feel responsible for the well-being of the other person. And it's also really hard to say no to people's requests. You might find yourself, if you're a self-sacrificer, really struggling with actually saying the word no when you just can't do something because you know that you're just going to feel really bad about the fact that you can't do it. So you also might find it really hard to ask for what you want and what you need, especially if it involves asking other people to change their behaviors that are not working for you or their behaviors that are destructive. And along these lines, the average person out there, it looks like you're a people pleaser. And people pleaser is just a big umbrella term for a lot of these constructs I'm talking about. It can be very validating. You can take pride in the fact that you're of service to others. Now, this aspect is healthy in some respects, but you may lose your ability to actually ask for what you want. You might become silent, so your needs to become silent, and you might find it very hard to assert yourself and your own rights. And people with this schema tend to have a sense of under-entitlement. We talk about the narcissist as being over-entitled. Well, a pure self-sacrificer often has a sense of under-entitlement, also if they tend to be quite dependent as well. And you might feel like you're actually a failure if you can't keep up meeting the needs of other people, if you're unable to rescue people, if you're unable to help them. So where does this come from? I've spoken about this in past podcasts, and Justine and I have also chatted about it. Often it either comes from direct learning. Perhaps your parent was a self-sacrificer, and so this dynamic was modeled to you. Or it can be you were instructed to put your needs second, maybe in a more deliberate way. Or implicitly, you saw the suffering of someone else and you felt really attuned to their pain. So as a child, you're likely to feel responsible for taking care of a family member, maybe someone who was sick or younger than you, or someone who was treated badly in the home. So you may have perceived that that other person, that family member, perhaps it was a parent or a sibling, you may have seen their suffering in some way. Maybe they were suffering due to an illness or because they were a victim in some way, someone has bad treatment of them. And it was painful to see them suffer, So you may have learnt directly or indirectly that it was actually your job to help them and to alleviate their suffering. Also, maybe this person that you saw as suffering, maybe you perceived them as very vulnerable, as very weak. Maybe they were ill mentally or physically, or maybe they were not as strong as someone. Maybe there was a perpetrator in the home, or they were a victim in relation to a narcissistic parent. So people who are strongly self-sacrificing tend also to be often quite highly empathic and sensitive by nature. They tend to notice the pain of others and want to take it away. There's nothing wrong with that, but it can be overkill. And what happens is, however, when we overly focus on the needs of others, we create a sense of self-suppression, right? Chronic self-suppression. This can often lead to feelings of dread, depression, psychosomatic illnesses and complaints, because you are sensitive and feel things deeply. You're more likely to feel guilty if you can't meet the needs of other people, or can't protect them, or can't make them better in some way. So you might have become conditioned to be a helper because your actions did help in some way, and you felt very validated and you felt very worthwhile because you could help. So there's a lot of conditional learning with the development of these schemas, the self-sacrifice in particular. Maybe you were explicitly asked to take responsibility, and maybe you were even made to feel guilty if you didn't. More often, it's a combination of the circumstances in the household and your temperament. And you saw the suffering of another person who you perceived to be perhaps not as strong, and you really wanted to act to take away their pain. And in doing so, you forgot about your own needs. And then people may become very accustomed to you being the helper. And because that was your role, you just took it for granted as though it was written in the stars. And you also got some validation needs met if you're able to help others. So as I've mentioned, self-sacrifice is often fueled by the emotion of guilt. So if you can't take away the pain, you feel bad about it and you feel guilty about it. And, you know, should you get angry about your situation, you might even feel guilty about that. So it's a really interesting schema. It could develop from many different permutations of the childhood environment. It's often something that's modeled. Often you'll have one parent who's very self-sacrificing, and because of your temperament and the circumstances, you develop the schema as well. It's a secondary schema as well. So perhaps there was an initial abandonment and then you develop self-sacrifice as a way of staying connected to people as well. So let's talk about subjugation as a schema. And it's really, subjugation is the process by which a more powerful person or group exert control over you in some way. So unlike the self-sacrifice schema, subjugation is done to you. Okay, so subjugation is done to you. It's a feeling that you have less control than other people around you, that you're perhaps less powerful, less autonomous than the other person, and that you need to ultimately submit to them in some way. And if you don't, there will be negative consequences, either real or imagined negative consequences. Think about a very dominating, controlling parent in the household. Well, you might have learnt that you better just shut up, because otherwise something, you know, you'll get into serious trouble if you speak your mind. And if this happens enough, you'll learn that, well, you pretty much have to suppress your true thoughts and feelings, including anger, suppressing your anger. Anger is a big issue in both subjugation and self-sacrifice. So therefore, you're suppressing, you self-subjugate, you're suppressing your own true self, you suppress your true needs, often your thoughts, feelings, desires, out of fear that the other person, maybe a narcissistic parent, out of fear that the other person will react badly, either in retaliation or perhaps in emotional disapproval or withdrawal of affection. So you can often be very much driven by the emotion of fear. And if you're highly subjugated, you can feel very powerless throughout life, right? You can feel oppressed. You could feel trapped in relationships and controlled by your partner. Yeah, and this can play out in relationship dynamics. And you feel like you don't have very much control at all. But sometimes this can be true, but sometimes this can be your schema clouding your view. So you can feel very much like you have no choice, that you are trapped and you are controlled, even though perhaps you do have a choice. So the fact is that you feel like you don't have a choice and you act accordingly. Hello, lovely listeners. I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. It's Gemma Gladstone here, and I want to let you know a little bit more about the Red Flag Project. It's an online course for women which provides you with a dating strategy designed to help you understand why you've ended up in relationships with men who have been emotionally unavailable or narcissistic. In the course, we'll help you begin to break this pattern and to really understand what's going on underneath it all. We'll teach you about all the actual red flags to watch out for and give you lots of practical advice and strategies. It will be life-changing if you let it. Just click on The Red Flag Project in the show notes below for this episode to get all the info. Now let's get back to the show. So the process of subjugation is often experienced as very automatic within us. We could be very triggered very easily with subjugation. And sometimes we don't know why we're acting the way we're acting, why we're getting really angry when our partner asks us to do something. Why are we avoiding a serious topic that we need to address? You know, why are we not asking for something we want? We're not fully cognizant of what's going on there. Often, in contrast with the self-sacrifice schema, we're a little bit more aware of what is going on, whereas subjugation can be more hidden from us. That's why a lot of people will happily identify and say they're a self-sacrificer, but they won't really often recognize how subjugated they are. So where does this come from? Where does the more subjugated, or sometimes coming out as submissiveness, where you're subjugating out of fear, where does this come from, right? So as a child, you probably subjugated yourself because you had a subjugating parent of some description. Or perhaps you were part of a culture that was subjugated and oppressed. Oh, very often it's a dominant or perhaps even violent, mistreating kind of parent. So you subjugated yourself in order to avoid bad stuff happening to you, to avoid disapproval, punishments, rejection, or abandonments. So you learn pretty quickly that I've got to shut down, I've got to suppress. I can't speak my mind. If I have anger, well, I can't externalize that because that would be dangerous. And the problem is that you then internalize it. Where does it go? It stays trapped within you and turn pretty toxic. So your parent, for example, one parent may have been very narcissistic. They may have been self-absorbed, critical, or entitled. And you may have learned that it was not okay to express any form of difference. And you were perhaps unacceptable in the eyes of your parents. So you had to conform and be something. Even if it was just, you know, you couldn't stand up to yourself. You had to, your rights were being violated or your boundaries were being violated in some way, and you couldn't actually express that very normal, natural anger that came up, that you had to subjugate it. So if you said something or did something that they didn't like, you might have been punished severely, you might have been yelled at or abused in some way. You probably felt a great deal of fear as a child, often, because maybe you had to walk on eggshells so as not to upset or ignite your parents' fury or disappointment. Disapproval. So you had to shut down, suppress yourself. You may have developed even a really notable startle response, particularly when this is coupled with the mistrust abuse schema, always sort of anticipating an outburst of anger, you know, from a parent. And in life, in adult life, this can look like that you don't ask for what you need because you anticipate people getting angry with you. So for example, just fairly benign things like, you may not want to take back something you bought from the shop that was faulty because you anticipate that the minute you ask for what you want, you'll be met with anger or hostility, you'll be controlled, you'll be manipulated, you won't get what you want in the end. So you inhibit. So there's a lot of inhibition with all these schemas, with all these other focused schemas, there tends to be a lot of suppression of self. And as a child, along with the fear you felt, you would have felt a growing sense of resentment towards the parent, potentially, and internal anger, you know, growing inside you, as I've mentioned, as you weren't allowed to show this in any way. And maybe, you know, maybe that anger comes out sometimes appropriately or inappropriately. Maybe deep down, particularly if you were raised by a narcissist, you might actually have a lot of rage. And I've seen cases of road rage where deep down at the heart of that has been a very big subjugation schema. So if you have a subjugation schema, you tend to believe that other people have more power than you do, even when they don't. So because it's a schema, we know that schemas are very black and white often. Either you do or you don't, you know, either someone is or they isn't, that they're not. It's very black and white. So when your schema is triggered, you may feel like a child, a powerless child, the way you felt when you were younger. So as a child, you didn't hold the power, you didn't have the means, and you weren't in control of who you lived with and how people treated you. As an adult, however, you have more power than you realize as an adult, right? We have the ability to change, to make healthy decisions, to learn new skills, new communication skills. We're not dependent. We're not helpless like we were when we were kids. So we're not that as an adult at all. You always have choice and more control than you think you have over the decisions in your life and who you actually choose to let into your life and who you choose not to let into your life. A subjugated person usually believes at some level it's dangerous to express their true thoughts and opinions. So what do? They deny and suppress them. So if you've been self-sacrificing or feeling subjugated for some time, and I hope I've discussed the similarities and differences between those two and made them more clear, then you really have to look at the anger. Sometimes there's a lot of anger in there. Unacknowledged and suppressed anger may start to become actually a real problem for you in your life, because any suppressed emotion which continues over time amounts to chronic stress, right? Any suppressed emotion over time is a chronic stressor. It is an internal source of stress in your body. You know, to hold so much anger and resentment causes stress on you and your immune system. Suppressed and denied real emotions amount to chronic self-denial or chronic self-suppression, and this amounts to chronic stress. And so it's not unusual for people who are very self-sacrificing and very subjugated to develop different stress-related physical symptomatology. It's not that stress alone may cause the problem, but stress can certainly make it worse or precipitate a flare-up or something like that. That's a consequence of holding all the anger and the resentment. Things like headaches, migraines, chronic muscle tension, pain, digestive problems, even flare-ups of other chronic illnesses. They're all typical psychosomatic manifestations of chronic self-denial. When your body starts developing symptoms which are a result of chronic stress, right, it's time to ask yourself some really serious questions. What am I suppressing emotionally? What am I not feeling? And we need to set up our life so that we can actually externalize what we're not feeling. Sometimes it may not be helpful, and the source of our anger may be gone, right? The abusive parent or the subjugating parent, the narcissistic bully parent, they might be gone. They might be dead. They might be estranged, or you may have more of a civil relationship with them now. But you need to find a way to acknowledge what you feel. Well, acknowledge what happened to you and release, breathe out, externalize. Don't hold it in your body. Another question is what am I doing that I don't want to be doing anymore? What relationship am I having that is just actually subjugating me? Should I get rid of that relationship? Is it with a friend? Is it a boss in a job that I just feel depressed going to every day? And also, what am I not doing that I really want to do? What's that creative project that you've always wanted to do, but you've never had the time for, or you felt you weren't good enough? Maybe it's time to put a focus on lighter things in your life, things that are creative, things that are going to give you a healthy outlet, things that will make your happy child just delight with joy. What is it? Is it music? Is it art? Is it being a stand-up comic? You know, what is it that will help you release or sublimate in a healthy way some of the old stuff you've been carrying? I've touched on this a minute ago, but what relationships need to end? Are there any in your life that need to end or that you need to withdraw energies away from? What boundaries have I let become eroded over time? Is there a friendship? Do you feel chronically used? Well, if you feel chronically used, not only do you have to look at the person, but you have to look at yourself. Where are your personal boundaries? Where's your personal responsibility for being treated like that? So many people were victims, rightly so, as children. Okay, we didn't have the control. We didn't have the power. We didn't have the freedom. We had to suck it up, but not anymore. Okay, well, it doesn't mean that you're a lifelong victim. Not anymore. You're an adult now. So what can you do to protect yourself? What do you need to say no to that you've been saying yes to your whole life and you're a bit sick of it? What is that? Where do you draw the line? And then finally, what toxic circumstances am I choosing not to change or not to leave? So Carl Jung said a great saying. He said, what you don't change, you choose. Okay, so by virtue of not changing a bad habit or not changing a bad situation, we are implicitly choosing that for ourselves. Okay, so we have to take healthy action if we want to change these kinds of patterns in our life. And people pleasing, or the need to please, the disease to please, whether it be driven by guilt, and perhaps more comes out more via the self-sacrifice schema, or driven by fear and comes out more out as the subjugation schema, eventually breeds these negative feelings of frustration, resentment, anger. And like I've addressed, these are all pretty toxic. It's really difficult, you know, if you're not being authentic, to express negative feelings, but you have to find a way to express them in a healthy manner, not cover them up with a coping mode, with drugs or alcohol or with food or with sex addiction or, you know, whatever it might be, whatever your refuge of choice might be. A bit of an overview of looking at sort of the subtle differences between, you know, what we mean when we say people-pleasing, which might be an umbrella term for schemas around subjugation, self-sacrifice, which are very, very related. Clinically, they're very, very related. You know, one way of thinking about it is that self-sacrifice is a branch of subjugation. So subjugation is where you are suppressing your authenticity, okay? You're suppressing what you really think or feel or how you want to act, how you want to behave. You're suppressing a part of you. And you could be suppressing that part of you because you can't not say no. You have to take care of others. You put their needs first because you feel like it's your duty. You need to, otherwise you feel guilty, right? The self-sacrifice schema. Or perhaps you're self-suppressing because you more feel like you have to because otherwise something bad will happen to you. You won't get your own way. Someone will be very angry at you. Someone will abuse you. So you feel like you're controlled by others. You're trapped. You've got no personal agency. If you do speak your mind, you feel like you'll be persecuted in some way. Well, this is more the subjugation schema. So in clinical practice as a therapist, these schemas are very much related, and they're actually clinically, at least, very highly correlated. If you've got one, you may have a bit of the other. It's possible that you're very subjugated and you may not be much of a self-sacrificer. But if you're a self-sacrificer, you're probably also quite subjugated. It's just that you may not be recognizing the degree because it's less conscious, whereas the self-sacrifice schema is more easily and readily identifiable within you. So I hope that has helped. And these schemas are really powerful because they erode your sense of self. They erode your sense of personal agency in the world. They can make you feel like a victim, even though you're not. And they can rob you of the true reality. Because if you're stuck in that mode all the time of, okay, nothing works for me, I won't speak up anyway, I never get what I want, others are stronger than me, etc., etc. If you yield to that and believe that, you'll never take important risks in your life. So this has been an overview of how toxic these schemas are and how much they're related and how they may have developed. Now, the thing is also that, as I said, they can be related to physical manifestations of stress, like if you're a big somatizer, you have headaches, aches and pains, irritable bowel. I'm not saying those things are purely caused by stress. I don't mean that, but they're exacerbated by stress. Sometimes they may be caused by stress purely, but you know, everybody is very different. There's no one size fits all rule for any of this stuff. So, but they can also cause psychological consequences purely. So chronic depression is very much related to long-term other directed schemas. These kind of schemas at play in your life can lead you to feel very down and very depressed and very trapped and very hopeless and very helpless. So schema therapy is great to identify these types of secondary conditional schemas I've been talking about today. And sometimes you don't even need a lot of therapy to help identify these and to get these a little bit shaken up, so to speak, and shape the foundations of these schemas. Sometimes it can even be achieved in a shorter term coaching model. And that's one of the things that Justine and I love working with people who have these schemas, because sometimes we can see great results pretty early on. And insight is the first step with these kinds of schemas, because we have to put names to our coping behaviors. And that's what I'm going to continue on and talk a little bit about the idea of passive aggressive behaviors next time, because this is a maladaptive coping strategy that we can use when we're subjugated that doesn't get us anywhere and is actually more common than you might realize. So that's next time. If you want to get in touch with us here on the podcast, please send us an email at justineandgemma@goodmood.com.au. And don't forget those links to some of the services we provide, the Red Flag Project, which is a short course for women. Find that in the show notes there. You'll also find the link to the Schema Chemistry webinar that I was discussing earlier. It'll be a revelation to you if you have a certain pattern of attracting the same type of person and you really want to know why. So thanks for joining me today. I hope you got something out of this podcast all about self-suppression and subjugation. I'll see you next time. Thanks so much for listening today. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love for you to share it with others. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast to get notifications when new shows are released. You can visit us at goodmood.com.au/podcast for more information. You know, this podcast is intended for learning and entertainment purposes, and we really hope it achieves that. But because it's not a substitute for personal therapy, we'd like you to consult a qualified mental health professional for tailored support. Bye for now.